if you take any subject, the most mundane subject, but look at it in a lot of detail, anything can become fascinating.
You're listening to With AI FM.
Hello, welcome to Women with AI, the podcast dedicated to amplifying the voices and perspectives of women in the field of artificial intelligence. Today, I'm welcoming someone who sees AI as key to unlocking the creativity we haven't even dreamed of before. She's passionate about the UK's creative industries sector, and before we jump into finding out exactly what it is that she does, let me tell you a little bit more about her. Emma Wharton-Love is the co-founder and chief Get Stuff Done officer at Spark, an AI consultancy for creative and marketing teams that helps clients unlock the power of AI with expert AI workshops and coaching. Before Spark, Emma spent her career focused on the future of work, from leading on hybrid working for Parliament and government, and 15 years as programme director in architecture and major construction projects at HOK and House of Commons. She was also an advisor at Lendlease and GoSpace, an AI property technology startup. Emma is also a graphic designer and co-founder of We Are The Loves, employer branding agency with her husband Jules Love, where they first started using generative AI in creative and business processes. She now powers operations at Spark, which was set up with her husband Jules to support creatives and marketers and help them transition to the new future of work using AI. At Spark, Emma is focusing on developing brilliant relationships with clients and ensuring they're adding value in the quickly moving world of AI. Alongside running Spark, Emma is a non-executive director of an NHS mental health trust, which she described as the biggest privilege and incredibly rewarding way to focus her skills and knowledge and attention. Emma Wharton-Love, welcome to Women with AI.
Oh, thank you so much. Such a nice introduction. You put it so much more eloquently than I could.
It's great to have you here. And I love the fact that you describe yourself as Chief Get Stuff Done Officer. I think more people need to have that job title.
That is so my role in, making sure stuff happens. It could have been a different word in the middle there, but I didn't think it was right.
Brilliant. Well, let's kick things off by getting to know you even better. Can you tell us, please, about your journey into AI and maybe what initially sparked your interest? What I've done there.
Well, so I've had a very squiggly career, which I hope gives confidence to other women out there who have squiggly careers too. But I think when I look back on it, the kind of common denominator is what you said, that I worked in the field of the future of work the whole time. So I'll just sort of recap a little bit about and put a bit more colour on what you talked about in my bio. But so I started off as a strategy consultant working in architecture, working with clients like The Guardian and American Express. And my role was to really work out how people would work in new buildings. It was when everyone was moving to sort of funky Google style buildings. So that was where my first sort of taste of it. And then I moved into looking at into government actually, and worked in the Cabinet Office and worked with the British Standard Institute and set up the first kind of standard for what's called smart working, which today we'd call hybrid working. And then moved on through and worked at Parliament and did similar work there, where I led hybrid working and also developed the plans to move Parliament while they would relocate. That was a bit of a side, what's the right way to describe it? Can't think of the right term, Jo. Friday.
My side head's hustle.
It wasn't a side hustle. It definitely was a major hustle, but
it was no one else was doing it then.
Perhaps
was it before? Was it pre-COVID?
Yes, pre-COVID. Yeah. That's a deviation. Yeah. And then after COVID, set up We Are The Loves, and that's what really brought me into looking. And We Are The Loves was the employer branding studio that you mentioned, which I set up with Jules, my husband. And he has a background as a commercial photographer and a management consultant. And as a management consultant, he specialised in the organisation design of marketing functions in corporates, actually. So, and then I had a graphic design background as well. So I thought it was a great idea in my early 30s to retrain as a graphic designer in the evenings while I was working at Parliament. So I ran a design studio for the previous 10 years as well. That was my side hustle. And And we started a couple of years ago, we started using a lot of AI in We Are The Loves. We're a really boutique, small agency, and we realized we needed to be able to punch above our weight. We needed to be really smart about the tools that we used. And then realized that a lot of the people we worked with other creatives, weren't using AI in the same way, and they started asking us about it. So we decided to use more AI, informally tell people what we're doing and give hints and tips. And then Jules went and studied applied AI at MIT last year as well. And then all that together meant that we decided to pivot our business towards being an AI consultancy to help other creative agencies like we were. And that's when Spark was born, I guess. So it's kind of that lovely confluence of what is the future of how we work and how we spend our time and how we are happy at work, which is my real interest. And then Jules's interest is the kind of technical side of it, and which comes from, you know, photography is a very technical skill. So yeah, that's how it was born.
Oh, I love that. It just goes to show it's never too late to change what you're doing or follow your dreams, change your dreams, just add a new string to your bow. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, I think now more than ever, you need to keep just keep adding new skills. Keep stuff in. I mean, I'm one of those people that enjoys having lots of different phases in their life rather than having sort of one way of doing things all the time. Yeah. So yeah, it depends on what makes you happy.
Yeah, and just embracing everything that's sort of happening right now. I think it's really important. I mean, maybe can you tell us about the role of sort of AI tools in the creative process and what sort of impact this has on business and business models?
Yeah, definitely. Maybe if I talk about like a kind of macro view of the kind of change it might have on business models first.
Yeah, sure.
And I think like a really way that I think about it is we've kind of been through this before. I think AI is going to transform creative businesses in a similar way to like the internet transformed creative businesses and transformed all our lives. Like if we just think back to say, let's think about Amazon 30 years ago, they were this like terrible website that you would think it's hilarious now, and they just sold books, but actually they've completely changed our lives and how we shop, how we communicate, how we access services. And I think AI will do a similar thing to all our lives, not just to creative agencies. It will like streamline processes. It will create new opportunities that we never really thought about, or perhaps we even dreamt about but couldn't get there. And it will allow us to be like more creative. And I think like what I mean by that is, so in an agency context, AI can enable us to streamline tasks and processes, making like the sort of routine work that we do, we can systemize it, and AI can do a lot of that heavy lifting for us, which means it frees up time to do the more interesting work. And it frees up time to think of sort of higher value, more creative activities and focus on innovation rather than focus on the kind of like turning the handle type tasks that we sometimes find ourselves doing. And I think sort of connected to that, it raises like the bar for us to push ourselves to develop even more original ideas, because AI is trained on all the ideas that have already ever existed before, and it can smash them together to come up with new iterations of them, new versions of them, but it's not coming up with brand new stuff. So that's the role of us, you know, to reinvent ideas and come up with new ideas as humans, rather than looking back at the past in quite the same way.
Because it's, you know, lots of people think, oh, is it going to take the creativity away from us? But I think you're right. It's freeing up the time. I mean, that's the whole point of using a tool, isn't it? It's to make your life easier. And as you say, if it's freeing up the time for the humans to come up with new ideas, because you're right, because AI is just predicting, it's doing, you know, it's using everything that's been fed into it before. So yeah, how does it come up with something new? Can it come up with something new? Do we want it to come up with something new? Or is it, as you say, it's just mashing together what already exists, whereas you need that kind of creativity yourself to sort of do that? And how do you how do you train sort of creative agencies to do that? Is it just sort of changing the way they think and like making sure they're not scared of it and that it is an opportunity? Or
That's a really big part of it, actually. We've done some research with people that we haven't worked with before, sort of industry research, but also every time we work with an agency, we survey them about how they're feeling now and what are the kind of main blockers. So, and what comes back time and time again, really from everyone, is that the kind of two things, the biggest thing holding them back from using more AI is that they just lack of understanding of what the tools can do. And that's generally because everyone's so busy like delivering work, they don't have time to engage with it. And it takes it takes time to practice and to learn and to know how to get the best out of the tools. It's really easy to kind of have a quick play around with something. You're talking to it because you talk to it in natural language. You tend to think you can just sort of give it a sort of 5-word prompt and it will give you the perfect thing back. But actually there is a technique to it to get the best out of it. So I think it's really easy for that lack of understanding to mean that it's not used. But also, like you say, I think there's still loads of fear, a sort of existential fear that AI is coming for creative jobs. And I hear that term so much, and it's not right. And I think whoever started that phrase has got like loads to answer for.
Terrifying the people that should be using it.
Yeah,
because the other thing, you know, when you start reading about OpenAI and all these things, and all governments are going to use it, and someone's going to create, you know, some like war machinery, and if we don't do it, someone else will do it first, and then you're thinking, oh God, then we're going down. You know, what was it? The film that was out, you know, what, Oppenheimer, and we need to do it first because someone's going to do this really awful thing that we've thought of. So we need to make sure that we do it first before they do. And it's like, maybe can we just use it, well, in this sector anyway, creatively to do good, to free us up to be more creative. It's like having an intern. That's how I've heard it described before, AI. It's a tool. You might run some ideas by it. And as you say, if you gave the intern or the graduate, here you go, here's just like 5 sentences, can you do something? They'd be like, what? Well, no, I don't know the background. I don't know what you mean. What style do you want it in? And it's exactly treating that. It like that to give it that information. And I guess, you know, Jules, as you say, was a photographer. I mean, back in the day, people were terrified when digital cameras came along. Oh, it's going to ruin, you know, the creativity and the artistic nature. But actually, you've got to embrace it. I mean, people still love developing film, but you use the tools that you've got.
Yeah, and that's a brilliant analogy, and we use that quite a lot because, you know, there's not going to suddenly not be a place for handcrafted design or any other creative that comes out, and perhaps that will become more high value, but if you don't understand how to use AI and how it could be brought into your process, then I think you're really missing a trick. So I think when we work with agencies or in-house creative teams, the first thing we always do is have a half-day workshop, and it's partly it focuses on how to get the best out of the tools, but actually the main emphasis is like really showing the facts about AI, demystifying it and opening people's eyes just to how much of a kind of epoch change it is and how much is being invested in it, but also that we've been through this stuff before. Like, we went through the internet becoming a thing, and you know, and we've adapted and survived, and we're a different type of designers or strategists or account managers than we would have been then. We work through the creative process and exactly how AI could be integrated at different stages of the creative process and what tools are out there right now to look at as well. And we recommend different tools, but of course those tools are new tools are coming out all the time, so that's something that isn't going to stand still. I think what's really important is like just sharing inspiration about what other people, what like real campaigns out and real brands out there in the wild that are that have used AI and have used that lovely combination of human and the AI in turn collaborating to get a really great result.
Brilliant. And because you've worked in some fascinating sectors, from major construction to parliament, which not everybody would find fascinating, but you had a really good line about that that you said, and I don't want to steal it and I'll probably get it wrong, but you said, if anything that you do enough research on, what was it, what was the line you had?
I was listening to an audiobook yesterday, and it was a line in the audiobook. It's a novel, the new Matt Haig novel. I've forgotten what it's called, but it's really enjoying it. I really recommend it. But in the novel, the lead character says, if you take any subject, the most mundane subject, but look at it in a lot of detail, anything can become fascinating. And she was actually quoting someone else in the with that quote, but I really love that quote. It's so accurate. And when I looked at Parliament or things in enough detail, they are fascinating, and they were great stages of life for me.
And because you've done all that, as you say, then you're able to then pass all that knowledge on and understand where businesses and creative business industries are coming from, because you've seen it from all sides. So, I mean, AI, it is moving really quickly. How do you stay on top of emerging technology like AI?
It's constant. Yeah. So I think, but that's kind of what Spark is here for, is to keep on top of it and then to assimilate the information and like curate it, so that when we're passing that on, it's like only the information that creators really need to know, because there's like so much AI noise out there. It's crazy. If you scroll through LinkedIn, I don't know if it's just me, because you know I'm talking about AI a lot, but nearly everything is about AI on my LinkedIn feed. So we, unusually for I guess a company like ours, we dedicate a lot of time each week just to research. So it'll be at least a full day where we are just keeping on top of the tools and using them and testing them. And like as creatives ourselves, we test the pros and cons of all the different tools, so that we can advise others about, like, this tool is great for like facial features if it's an image generation tool, or this other tool is much better for copywriting than that one. And and so we keep on top of that. But there are some really great newsletters and things people can subscribe to, as well as ours, of course. But my top tip would definitely be to subscribe to the Neurone, which I don't know if you subscribe to that, Joe.
Yes, I do.
It's really concise, and it's a lovely, entertaining read as well as being really interesting.
Yeah, I do like it. It kind of stands out when you get it in your inbox. Because like you, I've, you know, doing this podcast, trying to learn as much as I can, I did sign up for lots of newsletters in the beginning. And now I'm like, oh my goodness, there's too much. every day. How can you stay on top of it? And actually I found, because you have your update, is it a monthly update that you do? I think it is, with Jules, and it's what's new in creative AI. And I was listening to your most recent one before speaking to you today. And I was like, oh, I didn't know about the mango advert. I didn't know about this. I didn't, you know, some of the things I'd heard of. But then it also made me think, oh, I do know a little bit about what I'm talking about, because you were talking about the same things that I sort of wanted to know more about. So can you tell us a bit more about that? Because I love the fact that you can spend a day researching it, but that is your job.
Yeah, I mean, it's at least a day a week, and it is our job. And so a lot of that research it feeds directly into our training that we do with creative teams. And so that training, like, we are updating it every week, so it is like the most recent, most relevant information. But and we feed that, as you say, into our What's New in Creative AI, and we run that at the end of every month. It's every month at the moment, but we're thinking of making it more regular, because there is a lot to get. A lot happens in AI in a month.
You should, and just because it's really useful, so I'd appreciate it.
That's good feedback, good to know. But the other thing that we do, which I think is really, which is really key, is we spend a lot of time just out there talking to creatives about what they're doing, and also collaborating with creative consultancies to talk. So right now we're doing some work with an agency called Big Fish. If you look at their website, they work with a lot of food brands. You might look in your cupboard after this and you'll realize that most of the brands in your cupboard are designed by Big Fish or created by Big Fish. And they're doing some really interesting stuff with Midjourney. So we're working with them to understand how their designers are really using Midjourney and for practical sort of end creative use. Because a lot of these tools are brilliant in the creative process and for ideation and for concept development. But sometimes you take them that far and then you might shoot the end photography in real life. But they're doing some work with clients where the Midjourney work is the end product. That's so interesting. We're also doing some work with a brilliant AI automation expert too, because the AI tools in the creative process become like super powerful once you join them all together. And that's when they can really, you can really automate things and you can develop agents that actually do a job for you that you would normally do in your role, but it's perhaps something that is, like I was talking about at the beginning, like really routine, and it's like the same thing every time. So you can send your AI intern off to do it. So we collaborate with a lot of people who are like deep experts in one specific thing to understand what they're doing as well.
And on a sort of personal level, kind of, do you and Jules, do you approach it differently, would you say? I mean, do you have sort of different views on AI?
I don't think we have different views. I think that would be tricky running a business together about AI. Oh, yeah. If we had really different views.
No, it's scary, don't use it.
Yeah, exactly. But we do use it differently, for sure. I am neurodiverse, and Jules is neurotypical, trying to think of the right word. And so I think that means that we use it a bit differently. And also we have very different roles in Spark. So Jules focuses on all the training materials and keeping those like absolutely up to date. And I'm focused more about internally in the business and developing our services and business growth. So we kind of use it for different things in that way. And so Jules will be testing the like image generation tools or the new video to video tool that Runway is launched, and he'll be spending a lot of time doing that, whereas I'll be doing more business process stuff. But I'll tell you about what I do, because that might be really useful to some people. Yeah. So before we went live, I think we talked about AI meeting assistants, and yes. I was saying how I use TLDV, but there are loads of other ones. And they're all very similar. But I use TLDV to record all my meetings, and you can tell it how you, and it records it. It has a full transcript and then it summarizes it as well. But you can tell it how you want it to be summarized. So over the summer, I did a whole heap of market research. I did 30 interviews with creative and marketing leaders, and I wanted to like pull out key trends from that. So as well as summarizing the individual meetings, I asked it to, you know, look at the trends, the opportunities, the pain points, that kind of thing that came out in each interview. It summarized each and then it emailed it automatically at the end of the meeting to me and the person I was interviewing. But also it has an ability to analyze across all the interviews at once on whatever parameter I want it to look at. And then it gives me all the timestamps of all the videos. Just click on go back and like listen to the verbatim thing that they said. And I think that would have saved doing that sort of research, that R&D project, it would have taken, I don't know, it would have taken me 2 weeks perhaps to do that. And I had a very quick first pass in like an hour or two. So it wouldn't be like my final research report, but it gave me a really good flavor of what the sentiment was. And then I use it for loads of other things. I have quite a lot of custom GPTs. I don't know if you use those, Jo.
Well, I've got a friend, and Nadio, he wrote 100 100 GPTs in 100 days. I can put a link to him.
Was that a personal
in
challenge?
The show notes. It was, and he continues. Anything that you do, any problem, any issue, he started doing a podcast as well, Education with AI. And he has got a GPT for everything, and he keeps sending them, and I haven't had time to look at them all yet. So, and I didn't know that you could do that. I didn't know you could create your own, which seems obvious now, because obviously you want to tailor it to what you need it to do. I've just sort of, you know, asked questions on the same ChatGPT sort of thread to sort of try and mold it. But tell me about all the ones that you've been using.
Yeah, so I set up a few. So I've got one which is my marketing advisor, which is great. I don't come from a marketing background, but I do. I lead all the marketing for Spark, so that's super helpful. So any marketing questions, I go straight there. I've also got a business coach, which is great, a GPT business coach. And I took all my my favorite business coaches out there, or sort of, you know, top voices of business people, and trained it on what they talk about in their books, so that I can ask specific questions and get advice from it. I also have a proposal writer and grant writer. Like we got a government grant from Innovate UK that we're working on at the moment, which was to do with that research that I mentioned earlier. But trained a GPT on all my grant applications, so that if I can then ask it, you know, what month did I say I was going to do this activity in? And then it just tells me, rather than having to go through all my Excel sheets and my project plans and things, I can just quickly ask it.
Wow.
Things like that are really helpful. Also got a tone of voice converter. So if I write something myself, I then put it through my Spark tone of voice converter. It's not perfect first time, and I'm sure it would be much better if I spent time refining the GPT, but it saves a load of time getting it 90% there.
And is it quite easy to do that? Like, how do you start doing that? Is there like a step-by-step guide, or is it just using, you know, ChatGPT to sort of start it off? How does it can you tell us how it works?
Yeah, so when you to set up a custom GPT, you need to have, you don't anymore. You used to need to have a paid for plan, but I think you can do it on a free plan as well now. But when you go into the ChatGPT window and click on custom GPTs, you can actually, there's an instruction box where you fill out the instructions for the specific GPT you want to build, and you can upload documents that you want it to refer to. So like my tone of voice converter, I gave it all the details of the really specifics of the Spark tone of voice, like a copywriter would do for you if you commissioned. So my copywriter gave me a tone of voice, and then I uploaded that to the GPT, and I gave it lots of examples to draw on as well of what good looks like, and then a set of instructions of how I wanted it to use those. But when you go in to set up your GPT, there's another ChatGPT window in here. I don't know how many times I can say GPT, by the way. But
we're not sponsored by ChatGPT, don't worry.
I know. Yeah. But basically, there's
I wish we were.
That'd be great. There's a ChatGPT window in there that helps you, that gives you helps you build your GPT. See what I mean? There's like,
I'm so going to have a play with this later. In
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. It's fun. I can see why. Why your friend has built 100 in 100 days, because it's a bit addictive.
Yeah, and I guess the important thing, as you said, is to go back and refine it and to do it. And then really it's like, it's just like being able to access that part of your brain that, well, when was it I said that? What did I say I'd do again? And you're right, instead of having to trawl through all the notes, it's kind of there. It's like having it's a personal assistant. And that's the dream, isn't it? I think for lots of people with AI, you want to have a personal assistant or AI that kind of knows you enough to be able to just prompt you or tell you, but it's us feeding it the information. It's totally, you know, using that, as you say, to save time and make it easier to things.
The other thing that's really good for like jogging, or for like, rather than trying to have to trawl your memory, is I mentioned it on the creative what's new in creative AI yesterday, is Google Notebook LM. And that's really good if you just want to look through like a really specific set of data that, so it doesn't search the internet, it just looks at the data you've given it, and you could put all your meeting notes in there as an alternative to using something like TLDB, and you can then search back for whatever you want, or ask it to you can ask it any question about it basically, or that you want it told back to you in a different way. The big difference about that one is it will speak it back to you. So it turns any information you've given it into a podcast of two people discussing that information. So so you can then access that information in a way that is quite easy, is very easy listening and accessible to listen to. So because I'm quite dyslexic, I really prefer to listen to stuff compared to reading a long document. And so for me, listening to a podcast about a document is
that's incredible.
Really, much better for me.
Yeah. And you can do your work. If you're sitting at your desk, you've done all the writing, you've done all the reading. Oh, you just want to go outside, stick your headphones on or earbuds, and then you can actually just listen to it all, you know, while you're making a cup of tea, go to the kitchen and sort of have that. I think that's amazing. See, these are all the things that I need to learn about, or I want to learn about. And I think, you know, hopefully everyone that's listening wants, you know, if they don't know already, it's these kind of bits of information that just, it's so exciting. Because I was at an event recently that was about AI. It was called AI at CAM. So it was about Cambridge, the University of Cambridge, but also sort of local government and that kind of thing. But again, it was the time that it saves, so having to like read through documents to kind of, you know, work out, you know, there was one example that it had taken, I don't know, like 40 weeks or something of work to read all these documents and go through it. Whereas, you know, the goal when they start using the AI tools is to get it done in 2 weeks. And it's just phenomenal how what more you can do. And it's not about getting rid of people or taking people's jobs. It's like actually freeing them up, like you say, to be more creative or to have time to do their job and do that.
The nicer work.
Yes.
The more enjoyable work.
Yeah. I want an AI assistant that's going to do the housework. And then I can do all the fun stuff. Well, it's going to write the report, do all this. They've listened. It's like it's that intern again, isn't it? Someone's there. They've been with you and they're like, oh, can you just write that up, please? Write that down. While I go and do something much more important. I mean, it's all moving so quickly. What excites you or scares you? Like, what do you think the future of AI holds?
I think for creatives, I think the future... it's very hard to predict the future in AI because look how much it's moved in like the last year.
Week.
Like 3 years ago, we didn't talk about it really. Yeah, exactly. So, but I think, you know, looking sort of a short term ahead, I think the future like really belongs to people who blend AI and human ingenuity. Some of the really interesting creative that's coming out is like a really interesting blend of kind of AI and lo-fi kind of creativity as well. And I think that's really interesting because it challenges us as creatives to start to think in a different way as well as the way that we always have. So I think it's intellectually really interesting. So I'm excited about it in that way. But personally I'm someone that's always a bit scared of the unknown. So as I think many of us are. So I think it's, but I find it much more assuring to learn about it and really know where we're at and what's going on and what's possible than put my head in the sand.
I love that. So for anyone that's listening that would also like to do that, sort of learn more and dive deeper into the world of AI, what sort of resources or communities would you recommend people explore? As well as we'll put a link to your your blog as well. But
thank you. Definitely the Neuron, like I suggested earlier, that newsletter. Like you say, Jo, don't subscribe to like all of them because then you'll end up reading none of them.
That's so true.
On our website we have a load of events. They're not all ours, some of them are ours, some of them are just events we're at, so that's a really like one place resource to take a look at. So from our point of view, every month we do a free introduction to AI for creatives and marketers, and next one's on the 30th of October. And you can register on our website or through LinkedIn. And then every month we also do the What's New in Creative AI. And in terms of networks, tonight I'm off to, I live in the Southwest, but tonight I'm off to London to an event. I think it's just called Creative AI Network, which is pretty cool, which has someone from LTX, which is a studio that is looking at consistent, it's hosted there, and they're looking at consistent characters and image generation at the moment. They've got a new tool that's out. And so there's going to be a lot of people. It looks like a really packed event, and I think it's only the second one that they've held. So it shows how much appetite there is to learn about creative applications in AI. So that would be my top tip.
Brilliant. Lovely. Thank you. Well, funny. So for anyone looking to connect with you and with Spark, where is the best place to find you online?
Online, I am on LinkedIn. And so I'm just at Emma Wharton Love on LinkedIn. And then there's a page for Spark as well, which is We Are Spark AI. And then, or just grab me on email, just emma@wearespark.ai.
Awesome. Thank you, Emma. I'll put all those links in the notes. And I'll just say, I think this podcast will probably, when people listen, will be going out in November. So if they've missed the October.
Forgotten. Yeah.
I know. Well, I was just looking at my calendar now, just as you were saying that. But I guess there'll be one at the end of November, maybe. Or if not, we can find the dates.
There definitely will. I think it's probably not quite listed yet, but it will definitely be by the time that people are listening to this. It will be end of November.
Brilliant. Well, Emma Wharton Love, thank you so much for coming on Women with AI.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.